Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, we might as well dive right into what's going to be the storyline of this entire week leading up to week six at Lambeau Field, Packers versus Cowboys. It's the Packers' number one ranked run defense against the Cowboys' number one ranked rush offense. And when you just look purely at the numbers, the Packers are not only first in the league at stopping the run, but this is a pretty historic start through the first four games of the season.
Pretty incredible, Mike. I mean, I believe it was the Elias Sports Bureau dug up the stat that the Green Bay Packers, 171 rushing yards, the fewest allowed in NFL history, second fewest, excuse me, allowed in NFL history dating back to when they started keeping stats in 1933, excuse me, through the first four games of a season. Pretty incredible that the run that they're off to, 1.99 yards per carry, have yet to allow a carry of more than 20 yards. Them and the Minnesota Vikings are the only teams that have done that. So it's a really great pace they're off to, and I think the one thing that I'm sure Dom Capers and Mike McCarthy will put smiles on their faces is the fact that it hasn't really been just one player. It's been every single phase of that defense, every single position group really factoring into that.
Yeah, for sure. And it looks like the Packers could get another boost, you might say, to that run defense with Mike Pennell coming off of his four-game suspension this week. And it says something about where you are statistically when you have a game you hold the opposition to, I believe it was 43 yards on 15 carries, a 2.8 average, and the average per carry you're allowing actually goes up because the Packers had been holding opponents to under 2 yards per carry through the first three games. So just a remarkable start. Now, to be fair, the only true feature back or top flight NFL running back the Packers have faced thus far is Adrian Peterson, and he's one of the best.
Yeah.
They faced him for basically three quarters and completely shut him down. But Jacksonville did not have Chris Ivory in the opener. The Lions did not have Amir Abdullah in week three. They had just lost him the prior week before coming to Green Bay. And then, the Giants had lost both Shane Vereen and Rashad Jennings to injuries. So the Packers have faced a lot of backup running backs. That won't be the case on Sunday with Ezekiel Elliott, a guy who, looks like he's maybe on pace for Offensive Rookie of the Year, but the quarterback on his own team maybe is going to have something to say about that too. But Ezekiel Elliott, the rookie out of Ohio State, a top five draft pick in this past spring's draft, and boy, you talk about a guy who's taken the league by storm.
Yeah, there was kind of a line of thinking a few years ago, Spoff, and I was included in that, of is it really worth taking a running back anymore in the first 10 picks? You know, because you've seen the Trent Richardson experiment not work out. Reggie Bush has had a fine career, but it never really became that dominant NFL back I think people expect him to be. Ezekiel Elliott is really, really putting a lot of credence to that right now in terms of credibility and what that might mean to take a running back that high. The Dallas Cowboys made it really no secret that that was going to be their guy. That's who they wanted. And he's showing why right now. And, I mean, they are running the cleats off of him at this time. I mean, I think he's on pace. Certainly, he's had 130 yards in, I think, at least all three of their last three contests. But I think he's on pace for something like, is it 375 carries this year? I mean, they, without Tony Romo and with having Dak Prescott, the rookie quarterback, as you mentioned, they've had to use him and use him often, but running behind that offensive line, it's been the perfect marriage so far.
Yeah, and you look at the Cowboys' history. I believe I read a story online when you talk about Elliott with three consecutive 130-yard rushing games as a rookie. That's something that Tony Dorsett, who was a Heisman Trophy winner, did not do. Something that Emmitt Smith, one of the greatest backs, all-time leading rusher, I believe, in the history of the NFL, he didn't do that as a rookie. So the start that this guy is off to, the combination of power and speed and whatnot, and as you say, the combination with that offensive line, which we saw 2 years ago in 2014 when they were the top rushing offense in the league with DeMarco Murray, that offensive line really, really is talented and knows how to get it done. And as you say, now they have that marriage again with the right type of running back.
Yeah, it just seems to me like there's always been some kind of distraction nationally with the Cowboys. Something else that's going on that maybe people aren't so much paying attention to what they do well. But this has been this way for the last two, 3 years now. They've had one of the best lines in football, if not the best, depending on who you talk about, constructed. They've put a lot of resources, a lot of first-round picks into making that happen. But at the same time, now you bring in Elliott. The first time I think they've really had a bona fide bell cow back with paired with that offensive line now. And Dom Capers said it best when he was talking with the media this week. Elliott is impressive in that he's 6 foot, 225 pounds. He has the strength and power, but he also has breakaway speed. It's sometimes hard to find that balance between the two. You have to sacrifice one for the other, and the Cowboys don't have to with Elliott. He can handle both.
Yeah, he definitely can. Well, as you said, that Cowboys offensive line is definitely worth talking about, but so is the Packers offensive line, and I want to get to that after the break. We'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, let's touch on the Green Bay Packers offensive line, which will be the less talked about offensive line this week heading into the Dallas Cowboys game, but a group that is coming off of, I think without question, its best performance of 2016. The game against the Giants, 147 rushing yards, I believe, which was a season high for the Packers, and Aaron Rodgers with 45 pass attempts and no sacks. A couple of scrambles in there, obviously, for some rushing yardage for Aaron. But this Packers offensive line seems to be with, you know, J.C. Treader as the new center, Lane Taylor as the new left guard. Not that there have been any major hiccups, but seems to maybe be, you know, finding its stride, really. Mike McCarthy used the term that the group is starting to gel, and the numbers, the statistics certainly bear that out.
Yeah, it hit me, I think it was about midway through the second quarter, when you started to realize just how much time Aaron Rodgers was getting to work with back there. And, you know, you look at what the New York Giants did, they certainly wanted to protect their secondary, which was definitely depleted. So it was a lot of four-man rushes, but they have two world-class pass rushers, and Pierre Paul and then, you know, Olivier Vernon, and they kind of did some different stuff with them too. You saw Vernon left rushing a lot against Brian Bulaga on the right side, but they kept him at bay throughout, and they gave Eddie Lacy a lot of room to work with early on for him to bust out to some of those carries. And when you get him to the second level, he's just such a terror for linebackers and especially defensive backs to take down. They really were able to break him loose there a little bit, and that was huge. I think the thing that really stands out to me, though, you talk about all the resources that the Cowboys put into their offensive line. There's no right or wrong way to go about it, but Green Bay, considering, you know, you have an undrafted left guard, two fourth-round picks from 2013 in Bakhtiari and Treader, and then, you know, the one first-round draft pick in Brian Bulaga on the starting line right now. So it's incredible what they've done, even though maybe they haven't put all those top draft picks into fortifying that line.
Yeah, and your longest tenured lineman in T.J. Lang is also a fourth round pick. So three of your five guys there as fourth rounders, and as you said, the one undrafted guy in Lane Taylor from Oklahoma State. I think the when you talk about busting Eddie Lacy to the second level and whatnot, what you see with this Packers offensive line, it's almost a carryover from the whole pursuit and finish idea on the defense. It's, you know, finishing the block and finishing the play, and those downfield blocks, the ones that maybe turn the 5 and 6 yard runs into those 12 or 15 or even 20 yard runs, those are the ones that are making the difference for the Packers. And you certainly saw maybe the best example of that on the third and one in the fourth quarter, where the Packers handed the ball, a simple fullback dive to Aaron Ripkowski, a play that had gained 4 yards on a third and short earlier in the game. Exact same play, and Ripkowski kept churning his legs, and the offensive lineman just kept pushing the pile down the field. You almost wondered if it was going to make it all the way to the end zone. Ended up being a 13-yard gain, gave the Packers a first and goal on the 10-yard line, but that's how the Packers offensive line plays it, is all the way to the whistle.
Yeah, it was kind of the moving castle there a little bit, and how it was just drifting and drifting, and the NFL has done a nice job of that. If a running back keeps his, you know, his legs churning, as you mentioned, the forward progress continues. They're going to give it to him. They're going to let the play continue. I found it interesting afterwards, T.J. Lang was talking a little bit about that, because if I remember correctly, I think Gripkowski kind of went behind the hole that he and J.C. Treader.
Yeah, was it was kind on of a, the left side. Yeah. Or I'm sorry, on the right side.
Right side there, that he busted through. And Lang actually joked about how, you know, he kind of came out of it then after he got the first down and ended up on the other side of the pile. And he was basically pulling the pile with him with his back towards the end zone. He's like, I don't even know if that was legal, but, you know, I was doing it. Yeah. So it's just one of those things that, you know, we talked about a little bit yesterday from what Randall Cobb said. I mean, it's just such an emphasis for these guys and James Camp, and they want to be able to finish those plays. They want to be able to push the pile when, you know, there might not appear to be anything there to see what else you can get out of it. And as Lane Taylor mentioned a little bit with a smile afterwards, it was even the little guys too. You know, it was the receivers out there also trying to make it happen. So it was definitely a group effort.
Yeah, getting in on the party, so to speak. And it's interesting because we saw actually in week three against the Lions, we saw a short yardage type carry with Eddie Lacy where he got into the pile and then they pushed the pile. Right. I think it went for about 8 yards or so and really got the crowd. Those are the types of plays that really get the Lambeau Field crowd going. When that running back just doesn't go down and the Packers are winning that battle with shoving some bodies around. It seems that the officials let that go. I know there are rules about helping the ball carrier, but it seems that as long as a lineman is not directly pushing the ball carrier right in his back or right in his backside, if it's more a pile of bodies or as long as he has his hands on another defender at the time, it seems to be perfectly legal.
Yeah, it's sort of that rugby scrum kind of a little bit in terms of that. But it is, as you mentioned, I thought the play with Lacy a few weeks ago was really interesting too, because that one wasn't a design. I mean, that the Rybkowski play was just supposed to go for 2 yards.
Right.
I mean, just get the first down.
Right.
The Lacy one was an instance in which it looked like the play was going to stop for probably about 1 or 2 yards, and he just keeps plowing forward. And when you have a guy like Lacy who just refuses to go down, that's something you want to be able to accomplish. Now, we got to see how everything shakes out with him and his ankle injury.
Right.
Mike McCarthy said on Monday he doesn't anticipate that it's going to be serious. How that affects his availability for Sunday, we don't know yet. But if he's on the field, the way he's running right now with that offensive line, the way it's come together with Lane Taylor in there at left guard, you have to like the Packers' chances with how they're performing on the ground game.
Yeah, and we saw back in 2013 as a rookie what Eddie Lacy can do on even on a bad wheel. So we'll see if he gets back out there this week. But plenty more to talk about. Packers-Cowboys coming up at Lambeau Field. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, when we look back again at the Giants game, coming out of the bye week, Mike McCarthy talked about two things that he wants to start winning on a weekly basis, one being time of possession, the other one being field position. Now, the Packers won the time of possession battle against the Giants decisively by 12 or 13 minutes,
right.
I think it was. But field position, the New York Giants definitely won that battle, and that didn't sit too well. And one of the issues the Packers are having right now is with new punter Jake Shum. Did not have a good night on Sunday night, make no bones about it. A couple of 30-plus yard punts that gave the Giants good field position that they turned into field goals. Packers just need to start doing better in that area.
Yeah, that was sort of the overlying message between Mike McCarthy and special teams coach Ron Zook when they addressed the media on Monday. They aren't in the business of switching things up week after week. I don't think you're going to see this ever play out where the Packers are going to be throwing a different punter on the field every other Sunday. But they did acknowledge that Jake Shum needs a punt better. And I think we've already seen it. When you go back to that Kansas City game when, you know, everything was sort of up in the air, you know, he was cut early from Tampa Bay, so we hadn't reached final cuts yet. The Packers could have made another decision there if they wanted to, but he punted early and often in that game against the Chiefs, and the Packers felt comfortable enough with it. I thought he looked really good. It's just been trying to get that back now since the regular season has started. This directional punting thing, it's been difficult. You know, you look at the issues that Tim Mastey had with it last year. You had Shum this year with some of the struggles trying to get the timing and everything quite right.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see how it progresses going forward, but certainly the Packers haven't given up.
Yeah, and we'll see. Sometimes in these situations, all it takes is one of those really big booming punts to maybe snap a punter out of it.
Yeah.
It's such a... whether you're a punter, a kicker, it's such a mental game with the specialist. Usually it comes down to focusing on some certain fundamental thing. Ron Zook talked about that it's probably the drop for the punter, Shum, just how the angle of the ball from the hands to the foot. It sounds so simple, but that can make such a huge difference in the results. And the other thing that unfortunately kind of bit the Packers on Sunday night in the field position battle, the coverage units. Packers had been both kickoff and punt had been covering very, very well through the first three games, but the kickoff coverage unit had some breakdowns. The Giants had three kickoff returns that I believe were 35 plus yards, something like that, and got pretty good field position out of that. And again, one game, it was kind of an off night, some missed tackles that that you don't expect to see, but something the Packers need to shore up.
Yeah, Dwayne Harris is probably a good time to see a returner like him this early in the season to get a feel for what the elite ones kind of look like. They did such a good job outside of maybe one play against Patterson in Minnesota, and otherwise we haven't really talked much about the coverage units too often. So that's certainly been a positive, but yeah, there just were too many breakdowns. The one that really stands out to me is where Jeff Janis kind of had to chase down Harris. I believe that was Harris in that one. Otherwise, that could have really bled through the middle for a substantial gain. Give credit to the defense. They responded, I think, in most of those situations. I don't know if that can quite quantify that as adversity defense situations, but the Giants really weren't able to channel that into much. So it worked out in that way, but going forward, certainly, as Mike McCarthy talked about at the beginning of the year, winning this field position battle, winning the time of possession, these are huge. And the punters factoring into that, the coverage teams are factoring into that. And realistically, that's what it's going to come down to, of making that goal accomplished by season's end.
Yeah, and unfortunately for the coverage units, we saw Chris Banjo walk off the field on Sunday night. Looks like he re-injured the hamstring that had kept him out earlier in the season. So one of those special teams leaders, a special teams captain, and we don't know how long he'll be sidelined, but it looks like he may be out for a little while to try to get that hamstring to heal again.
Yeah, and then the other thing too, and I don't know, the Packers are going to take this whole week to figure out how they're going to handle Mike Pinnell. Dimitri Goodson also coming off suspension as well.
That's right.
He was the gunner opposite of Jeff Janis when they had so much success last year on the punt coverage unit. So we'll have to see how that plays out.
Yeah, all right. Well, we'll throw it to a break, but right before that, a little bit of sponsor business here, Wes. Picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Sub's Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 12th. By completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/best seats. Cousin Subs, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, final segment, we'll talk about a player you've written about on the website for our Player on the Rise feature, second-year cornerback Ladarius Gunter. Dom Capers mentioned after the Lions game how he thought Gunter that day was maybe the Packers' best cover corner on the field, and he certainly seemed to follow it up against the Giants. Got a healthy dose of Odell Beckham Jr., didn't match against him the entire game, also saw some snaps against Victor Cruz. But boy, a young up-and-coming player who's been thrust into a bigger role than expected early on because of the injuries to Sam Shields and Demarius Randall, and a young guy that's responded.
Yeah, Mike, and it's so difficult. When you look at the way NFL defenses are structured now, how much nickel and dime packages you see throughout the course of the season, it's almost nearly impossible to keep the same five or six guys healthy as what would be those preferred rotational players throughout the course of a year. It's impossible, it seems like. So for Gunter to step in and play the way he has in wake of this injury to Shields, kind of fulfilling that Miami obligation, I think, to the Packers secondary.
Yeah, the old Miami Hurricane connection there.
But the thing that really impresses me the most, he has great size. He's very powerful with his hands. He makes for a really good press corner in terms of what his potential is. people were worried about his speed coming out of college, but as you saw with him going up against OBJ, this is one of the fastest, most athletic receivers in the NFL, and he hung with them tit for tat. So I think that says a lot about him. And, you know, we asked Mike McCarthy that during his news conference on Monday, what he's kind of meant to this defense. And the first thing he said right away was, good football player.
Mm-hmm.
Because he really has. He's been a gamer. When they let Casey Hayward go, when they knew they were going to commit themselves to these young second-year corners, as much as we want to talk about Demaryius Randall, Quentin Rollins, Ladarius Gunter is very much in that equation too, and we found out why on Sunday night.
Yeah, and he's interesting from a personality standpoint, much like Sam Shields in a way out of Miami, undrafted, you know, took the hard road to making the roster. Also really quiet, doesn't necessarily talk a whole lot. We don't hear a whole lot from him in the locker room. We didn't hear much from Sam Shields his first couple of years in the locker room either when he was feeling his way into the NFL, but don't mistake the quietness for any lack of confidence, because he takes the field, he knows what he's doing, he's confident in the scheme, he's confident in his abilities, whether it's OBJ lined up across from him or anybody else,
right.
And it's showing in his play.
Yeah, and how many times have we heard Joe Witt, the cornerback's coach, or Dom Capers, even these guys, Micah Hyde, I know, to address it too. Ladarius Gunter is an incredibly serious person in terms of how he approaches the game. There isn't a whole lot of smiles and laughter. He down in and down out, it's about the next play. And he's talked about that for, you know, as quiet as he is, he has in the past addressed how much of a chip he carries on his shoulder based on how things happened at Miami. This is a guy that played a lot of snaps for the Hurricanes, but yet people just had significant questions about him entering the league, and he played well. He's played really well.
Yeah, yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see how he develops, continues to develop now in his second season with the Packers. But we will call that a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the Team account. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.